Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining on this Friday to our Friday's call. The idea for the call today is that it will have two parts. The first part...
Olga, did we want to do a roll call?
Oh, roll call. Yes, yes, please. Sorry.
I'll do that for you quickly. Olga, with pleasure. Good morning, good afternoon. On today's call on Friday the 7th of May, we have Olga Cavalli, Claudio De Gangi, Deborah Hughes from staff. We have Glenda Sancheri, Julie Headland, Rob Hogarth, myself, Gisela Gruber-White. I don't have any apologies noted.
Excuse me, this is Julie. I think
we have Rafiq.
Sorry, absolutely, Rafiq Damak as well. My apologies. And if I could just please remind everyone to state their names when speaking. Thank you. Over to you, Olga.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And are we expecting someone to be called?
Olga, I have not heard a word from Zahid now
for over a week. No problem. Okay, thank you for joining. As I was saying, the purpose of the call today is we will review first some comments we still have from Task 1 document. I think it's a document which is quite polished and almost finished, I hope. We have two comments from Chuck that I would like your opinion about how to rephrase them or complete them. I'm trying to find them in the text. And I would encourage all of you, and if you're hearing the MP3 after the call, to review the document and send any minority reports or minority comments so we can include them in the section that it's about that at the end of the document, and we can submit it as soon as possible to the OSC. As you know, we are a little behind the schedule with our work, but that's okay. We have been having a lot of different opinions and diverse ideas, so it's good that we could manage to build this document. I'm trying to find Chuck's comments here.
Sorry, Olga, this is Julie, but Claudio just sent around an amended version of the document.
I haven't seen it.
Beginning. I'm wondering if we should start with and go through from the beginning, and I'd be happy to help do that and cover his changes as well.
I'm so sorry. I didn't see that. I didn't see the message from Claudio. So if you have that online, that would be great, because I don't.
Okay. Well, I'm happy to walk. This is Julie. I'm happy to walk through it, Olga, if that's helpful.
So if we can review Claudio's and Chuck's comments, that would be great.
Wonderful.
Chuck just joined. Sorry, I'm late.
Hi, Chuck. Good morning.
And this is Julie. So, Chuck, we are on the version of the document, the Task 1 recommendations document that Claudio sent around this morning, just minutes ago. And it includes, the remaining comments from you that we have not discussed. It has the changes that I made after last week's call that are highlighted, and then the changes suggested by Claudio that also are highlighted. So I will run through the document and covering each of the changes.
Okay. I'm trying to pull it up.
This is Olga. I just received the document from Claudio. I haven't seen it before I was talking. Okay. Julie, if you have it open, while I'm opening it, would you tell us which...
This is Julie. I'll go ahead, Olga, and I'll begin. So beginning at the first page, under the main title, GNSO Operations Steering Committee Constituency and Stakeholder Group Operating Work Scheme, Claudio has added a colon after that title and then added the text Common Operating Principles and Participation Guidelines.
Oh, good morning. Tony Harris, Jenny.
Hi, Tony. Good morning.
Do you have an echo on me today?
Yes.
Oh, that's normal then. I guess I'll be knocked off the call any moment then. Okay, well, I said hello anyhow.
Sorry.
This is Julie. I'll proceed then through the document. Further down on page one, there is the change that we discussed last Friday, where we are being specific about the origin of the recommendations, and I added at the end of the second sentence in the final paragraph at the bottom of the page, it says, task one, the subject of these recommendations is split into the following four subtasks, which correspond to the recommendations in the BGC work group report referenced above. And then each recommendation is footnoted to show where exactly in the BGC report that recommendation was taken.
That's okay. That looks very good.
And in addition, I added some links to the specific document to the BGC report in the footnotes, just to be complete.
Julie, if I may, let me ask you a question to the group. Are we okay with the change proposed in the title, proposed by Claudio? Here, no comments. I think it's okay. Okay, Julie, sorry to interrupt you.
Not at all. So continuing with page 2 of the document, and the paragraph that appears just above Section 2 recommendations, we added, as discussed last Friday, the definition for the word should, and Claudio has amended that definition, so I will read it for everyone. In addition, comma, the word should, as used in the following recommendations, means, colon, an obligation or duty to take a certain course of action unless otherwise specified. Are there any concerns or questions?
Where is that on page 2?
It's page 4. It's page 4 of the document.
Oh, it's page 4. Okay.
I'm page 2, but it's actually, I apologize, Chuck, this is Julie. It's, I see now it's actually page 3, and it appears just prior to the beginning, to the start of the Section 2 recommendations.
In my document, it shows that it's page 4, but it may be the computer.
Yeah, mine, it is on 3 for me.
Okay.
All right, I found it.
Any comments?
No.
Okay, so proceeding.
I'll refrain.
Okay, so proceeding through the document, the changes indicated in the in red line are the changes we agreed where shalls are changed to should, and so everywhere they appear, that is the change. And then on page 6 in the document that Claudio sent, in section 2.2 operating principles, Claudia has added a second paragraph, and it reads, groups should adhere to the following common operating principles, colon, representativeness, process integrity, flexibility, transparency, participation, openness, and other norms common to the GNSO.
Looks fine.
Yes.
Okay, proceeding through the document, still just highlights of shalls changed to should. So I'm now proceeding to the section where there are some additional comments from Chuck that I, in error, neglected to mention last Friday. And this is in the section 2.3 group member database, which begins in the document Claudio has sent on page 8. And then paging through that section, we actually arrive in the latter part of the section, and specifically 2.3.2, storing and updating membership records, paragraph C. And Chuck has a comment on the last word in that paragraph. Specifically, the second sentence in the paragraph reads, the operator should also have the ability to set a member or member delegate to inactive. And Chuck's comment relates to the word inactive. And it is that the group probably needs to define inactive. And he notes that they do that in the registry stakeholder group charter.
And I guess, you know, thinking about that a little further, that it's not so much that we need to define inactive in this particular group, but I think that the if there is an inactive category, it needs to be defined in the charter.
I'm sorry, this is Tony. What letter is that in this?
It's D, Tony. It's D in 2.3.2.
Actually, Olga, this is Julie. It's C. There's a
C. Sorry, sorry.
To C.
I confused. Yeah, you're right. C, and there, these are the comment in D. Sorry.
I can't see it here. This is 2.3.2, right?
Yes.
Okay, I've got the wrong one. Thanks a lot. I'll find it. Yeah. Okay.
Chuck, so you're suggesting that we do include a definition, or
no? I'm modifying what I said, Olga, and suggesting that maybe we want to say something like that. The operator should also have the ability to set a member delegate to. Let's see. Wait a second. This is
no. It's
who is the operator here? I'm confused.
This is Julie. The operator is the person is the staff administrative person who is making changes in the database.
So we do need to have a definition then of inactive.
Well, but
right.
The wording sounds
because the operator
the wording sounds kind of funny.
Yeah, the operator above is referred to as, by the way, a systems operator, and that is shortened to operator. But yes, in this case, it is. We're directing the operator to. We're saying that the operator has the ability to set the member or member delegate to inactive. But
how will the operator know whether somebody's inactive or not? That's why we need a definition.
Chuck, do we have any definition as an example for? Some your constituency or others who are in the panel that we have a text that we could use as a base?
I don't think our text would necessarily work for everybody else. We do have a definition, and, you know, it's if they, and I can't quote it without looking it up, but basically if they haven't participated in any online discussions or any meetings for, you know, I don't know, three meetings in a row or something, then they are moved to an active status. All they have to do to become active is participate, even on the list. So it's real easy.
Okay.
But what we were trying to do is avoid the situation where somebody who's not active at all is still counted in the active voting. And so it makes it difficult to reach a quorum or to make a decision. In other words, if you get a lot of members that all of a sudden disappear and they're still factoring in your quorum and in your whether or not you reach certain levels of consensus, it could be really difficult. And as our organizations grow, that could be a real handicap.
Yes. This is Olga. So what I see here is that maybe instead of including a definition of inactive, we should say that inactive should be defined in charters or...
Because who's going to define it? If we don't.
This is Claudio. Could we just put a comma after inactive and just say based on the... you know, as defined in the group's charters.
That would probably work.
Yeah,
we might need to add that if there is such a. I guess that's fine. That's fine, just like that.
Olga.
Rafik, go ahead.
I think we don't need to add about active or inactive people. I'm not sure that all charter of stakeholder groups or constituency. Taking care of the definition of active member or not. it's kind of complicated, and I think maybe polemic things that how to define who is active or not. So maybe we should strike this path.
It's not at all complicated in our case, Rafi. It's very simple.
Yeah, Chuck, but your registry is not like, I'm not sure, in the non-contracted parties. So we don't have people involving at the same level. So we are also trying to outreach and to involve more people. So that's my.
Can I get in queue, Tony? Here.
Rafik, are you finished?
Yes.
Okay, Tony, go ahead.
Yeah, I agree with Chuck because I think the whole purpose of what we're doing in this working team is to come up with uniform procedures and standardized ways to deal with things in the constituencies and stakeholder groups. And I guess really we all have to get come to grips with whatever is needed to be able to do what we're trying to do here. And Chuck made a very good point. If you do not sift out inactive participants for the purpose of a quorum or a consensus position, you've got perhaps n number of people sitting out there who are not even any more interested or involved with ICANN.
Thank you, Tony.
Hey, guys.
Michael
joining late. Sorry, just to let you know I'm here.
Hi, Michael. Welcome.
Yeah,
who was it? Rafik?
Rafik.
Go ahead.
Tony, I understand that point, but I still believe that it's really polemic and can be used to exclude people. So I'm not sure how we can define active or inactive, especially in the contracted party.
Rafik, let me take another cut at it, because there's no exclusion the way we do it at all, okay? If somebody hasn't participated in three consecutive meetings or on the list, the discussion list, I don't remember the precise terms, maybe Michael does, they are declared inactive. All they have to do to switch to active is participate. Send an email. Send a response saying, I'm alive. So there's no exclusion at all. It's just we're dealing with a problem. We do have quorums to meet at times. We do calculate and report the level of support from the stakeholder group, so if you have, and we're looking at maybe hundreds of new members, if we have a bunch that are inactive that prevent us from reaching a quorum or that slant the level of consensus in our statements, even though they're not participating, it doesn't work.
The whole, to add to what Chuck's saying, sorry, Tony, you wanted to go first? Sorry, go ahead.
Tony, go ahead.
No, I was just wanting to add something else. When ICANN staff have to plan conference calls, I think it would help them to have a more accurate estimate of really how many people will be on the call, and that may also involve a cost factor. They may sort of plan a call on 80 people participating, and you end up with maybe 40. So I think that's also something we should consider.
Yeah, I think. Sorry, can I go ahead?
Sure, go ahead, Michael.
No, I just feel pretty strongly about reinforcing what Chuck's saying. You know, I think it's a very low bar to ask people to attend one out of three meetings. I mean, that's just to show up on the attendance list. You don't even have to actually speak during the meeting to be considered an active participant. But it does say that if that's the bar, then at least you should have a clue of what's going on. And therefore, if you have an opinion, at least it's an informed opinion. And I think that's what the expectation is. People that participate in these things have an understanding of what's going on and don't jump in every eighth or ninth meeting and taking things out of context and not necessarily having the background to why something's being suggested or supported.
And we're even more flexible than that. Even if they don't attend one of our meetings, if they've at least participated once on the list, they're okay.
Okay.
Olga?
Yes, Rafi, go ahead.
Yes. Maybe it depends on the stakeholder groups of our constituency. Maybe we can add some additional part to that section that we say the definition of active or inactive depends to the stakeholder groups. So, because I'm not sure that all the stakeholder groups have the uniform definition of
Okay, Rafiq. We're not saying everybody has to have a definition like us or have it, even have active and inactive.
Because for example, in the non-commercial stakeholder groups, I'm not aware that we define what is active or inactive for a member. So we cannot have this uniform definition for the database, but. So we just add the part saying that it depends, it's up to the stakeholder groups, etc.
This is Olga. If I may, Claudia, could you remind us the change that you proposed? I think that it covered this openness to different stakeholder groups, organizations, and possible definitions for inactive.
It was just to put a comma after inactive and then say as defined in the group's charter. Or I guess we could say as provided for in the group's charter.
Okay.
Yeah, that latter one's probably a little bit better because they may not define it. It may not even be provided for, but that's okay, I think.
Yeah. Olga, this is Rob, if I can get in the queue as well.
Rob, please go ahead.
Thanks. I just wanted to point out some just general background about the importance of the type of issue that you're discussing, because I think some in the GNSO improvements process and some of the comments submitted in that overall process really looked at active participation as an important element of transparency and representativeness of a group. And you know, I think one of the key challenges of some commenters on even just the reconfirmation of existing constituencies touched on the fact that there were membership rosters that may have listed folks who were no longer active or even real participants in a community. And finding some mechanism for being able to confirm or, you know, do some due diligence or otherwise assure that people are participating, I think is an important part of the overall process, particularly for participation, transparency, and representativeness. Thanks.
Thank you, Rob. Any suggestions about how to amend the text and make it more... and define inactive or include the change suggested by Claudio?
The change suggested by Claudio, the last one, I thought worked just fine. And it leaves it up to the stakeholder groups and constituencies to deal with it or not, however they so choose.
Rafiq, are you okay with that?
Can you please repeat? I'm not sure.
Julie, did you get the last... version of the change?
Yes, this is Julie, Olga. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I heard it as adding a comma after the word inactive and then adding as provided for in the group's charter. Group's charter. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah, that's correct. And it's okay, this change? Is it okay for you, Rafiq?
Yeah, it's okay.
Okay, any other comments? Okay, I think it's a very good change. Thank you, Claudio, for suggesting it. We have 2.3.2D. It says the operator should perform the updates to those holding an executive position in an ICANN community and check this. What does this mean? I don't know where this text came from, honestly. Does someone have any idea?
Olga, this is Julie. I think that this is the text that was provided for in the recommendations put together by the group that had Krista and Tony in it.
Tony? Could you
I'm thinking,
give us
I'm
some,
not
some
too
light?
I'm sure about that. I don't remember that we put that in.
I have to go back to the original document, but I just cut and pasted what Krista had sent in her last version.
Could you point me to the exact the item? What is it? 2.3? What
it's 2.3.2. The last one is just D. It's the last.
The operator should perform the updates to those holding an executive position in an ICANN community. I don't remember having seen that before.
It may be okay, but I don't know what it's asking for.
I see it out of context. I think we should pick it up.
Yeah,
and if somebody
can
figure out what it means, and we could reconsider it later, but I would suggest that's the best thing to do. Olga, I apologize, but I'm going to have to jump off for another meeting that I have to go to.
Thank you for joining.
But it looks like we've covered that document, right?
Yes, we did.
Thank you very much, and sorry for my weekend. And by the way, I may be in the same boat next week, although I may not be able to call it all. I will be in Russia for the Russian IGF. So the timing might be okay because I think it's late afternoon for me there, but it just depends on the activities there. Okay?
Okay,
bye, everybody.
Have a good
weekend.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Chuck.
Okay. Julie, do we have some other things to review by the end of the document?
No, Olga, the text has all been reviewed, and I've captured the changes. So I will accept the changes that that were previously provided, and then I can just accept all the changes if we agree to them, and then I will send around a clean version for everyone to review.
Great.
Okay. Just to confirm, we're taking out D then in 2.3.2, right?
Yes. Julie,
okay, fine.
In the case that someone has an explanation, then we can rethink about it. So the plan is the following. Julie will send a clean version with all the changes already accepted and included. And we could commit ourselves to make the last revision for in 1 week. Do you think that's okay? And we should receive any minority reports or comments by then. And then we could submit it to the OSC. Are we okay with this date, or we need more time?
Sounds good.
I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Fantastic. Thank you. Thank you very much for the cooperation in finalizing the document and the good ideas for finding the last versions of the text. So we're done with task one for today, and I think we have some other things for. There's someone else joining our call, Julie, about outreach and. Did I get it right?
Yes, Olga, this is Julie. Actually, Scott Pinzon is on the call, as
in life, great.
And is happy to. I thought, we mentioned last week that it might be helpful for him to some of the activities already underway within ICANN, specifically relating to the GNSO, that could relate also to outreach activities. And just so that, we're not duplicating things that are already taking place perhaps in the outreach recommendations, or if we feel that the types of activities are something that would be useful, then it might be something that we might want to include in the work team might want to include in the recommendations. So Scott is on, and Olga, if you'd like, we can turn it over to Scott.
Sure. Thank you very much, Julie, and welcome, Scott, to our working team, and thank you very much for joining us today.
Well, thank you. It's a privilege to participate with what I think is a pretty distinguished panel.
Thank you.
The things I have to share are somewhat random. We work on outreach activities kind of between other projects. Most of what we do is responding to groups like this one, but we try to move ahead when we can. So I just thought I'd share with you about four random points that relate to outreach. First one, perhaps, is that for the first time ever, ICANN now has a corporate communications department with an outreach mandate. On April 1st, Barbara Clay joined the company. She's our new Vice President of Corporate Communications, and she's a pretty high-powered lady. She worked for 8 years in the White House, for a year as the Communications Director of the Ways and Means Committee for the United States Congress. And I spoke with her last week, and she has a mandate from Rod to expand the reach of the ICANN community, including the GNSO, and particularly to bring diversity. So that is part of why they're also going to Moscow next week and Cairo later in May. So just wanted to let you know that there is, from the staff perspective, strong incentive to communicate with the GNSO outreach efforts. So that's number one. The next little random outreach-related point is that we are continuing our efforts to enhance the GNSO website. This was a big focus of the communications and coordination working team. The design that they came up with was approved by GNSO participants in Seoul. And those build-outs are likely to finally occur across June and July. And in that, there's a new About the GNSO section on the website that is especially made just for newcomers. So today, if you go to the GNSO website, I mean, you're all familiar with it, there's not a particular point where a person who is new to the GNSO could readily find out what the GNSO does and understand the structures and all of that kind of thing, and even get a grip of what issues the GNSO is addressing currently. So all of that will be on About the GNSO page in the upcoming website. And we've even proposed some short little videos that in 2 minutes or so could give a person an idea of what are the hot topics currently and how they could participate. So that's point two. My third random point related to outreach, this is a little bit arcane, but I think you can follow along. There is a certifying body called the ISC Squared, and their mission in life is that they certify, they create testing that allows people to qualify as information security information system security professionals, and you can be certified as an auditor or as a person who is adept in security systems. And what you wind up with, for example, is a degree or a certification known as a CISSP. There's actually about 40,000 CISSP professionals around the world in over 100 countries. And we recently, as ICANN, acquired the ability from this organization to grant what are called CPEs. These are continuing professional education credits. So for these people to remain certified in network security, they have to do a certain amount of self-education and volunteer work during a calendar year. They need to get 40 CPEs, which are earned at about the rate of one per every hour that you volunteer. So ICANN is now an official issuer of CPEs so that we can use these to incent security professionals to join GNSO working groups, for example, or if you wanted some sort of background briefing on network security, we could offer CPEs to a professional who might want to provide that sort of education. So it's really a pretty minor point, and yet it is a nice way, cash-free, to incent qualified people to participate in some of the security work of the GNSO. And we view this as a little bit of an experiment, or we're just trying it to see how it works out. If it does work out, then we can also try expanding it to other types of careers that involve these continuing professional credits. many attorneys have a kind of a similar system in which they maintain their status before the bar. So that's a possibility. And then finally, the policy team itself at ICANN is working hard to support outreach efforts in the GNSO. One of the things we're doing is a special presentation on May 20th, specifically geared to help people who are completely new to ICANN get a sense of what's happening and maybe find their way to what group they would like to affiliate with, whether it's in the GNSO or perhaps at large. And then we also do update webinars prior to each international meeting so that people can get a running start on where we are relative to each issue that the GNSO is addressing. So along the way with that, we're building up orientation materials. We have more diagrams and things that are understandable for explaining how the GNSO works than we have had in the past. It actually is a little bit difficult to accumulate these because the whole point of outreach is to adopt these so that an outsider can understand them. Most of the discussion at ICANN, we're so accustomed to talking to one another that it is hard to get people to agree on the accuracy of items that are going to newcomers. So my one plea to this group is if you can help us when we're trying to do things for newcomers to put on the mental framework of a newcomer instead of getting all deep into, is it going to be called a constituency or is it going to be called an interest group? Things that people don't care about until they get involved. So we're trying to do things that are simple and clear. And I have a note here from Rob that reminds me, I didn't even have this on my list, but I should have. I hope some of you are familiar with the podcast that we launched in February. If you're not familiar with a podcast, it's somewhat like a radio show, but you receive it on your MP3 playing device. So it could be your computer, or if you have an iPhone or a Zune or whatever you like to listen to MP3 files on, that's what the podcast plays on. The podcast is called ICANN Start because it's specifically geared to help people who are new to the world of ICANN take one issue and get enough of a basic orientation on it that they can participate with some context when they start listening in on given issues. So hopefully you are familiar with the new e-learning page on the ICANN website. If you're not, you simply go to ICANN.org and you'll see a new tab that was never there before that says e-learning. And if you click on that, you can quickly find your way to webinars and audio briefings and the podcast. We're doing an episode a month of the podcast, and we now have 5 of them out there. The one that has been downloaded the most is the one episode about IRTP. For some reason, people want to know about that. And since we launched, we have been averaging about 1,000 downloads a month, so there's definitely appetite within the ICANN community for these nice basic orientation materials. Are there questions or comments on what I've offered so far?
Olga?
Yes, Rafik, you want to comment?
Yeah, so first thank you to Scott for the presentation, but I just have one concern about all this effort. I'm not seeing any real specific outreach effort towards, people or organizations from developing country or also towards non-commercial actors. And for example, about the CFP, I'm not sure that what is the idea behind that to outreach a professional in network security? It doesn't mean that a professional have a specific or special interest on DNS issues. So maybe we should work more about that.
Scott?
I'm sorry. I had difficulty understanding. I don't know what the point is.
Do you have difficulties in hearing, Rafiq?
Yes.
Okay, briefly. So, I am about the presentation, Scott's presentation, I didn't see what's the specific outreach effort towards developing countries and also for to outreach non-commercial organization or people. And also, I'm not sure that this effort or experience with the GSP is really interesting because as far as I know, those people are more working about security in general. Even if about network security, it doesn't mean that those people have a special interest on DNS issues. So.
Scott, could you get what the comments from Rafiq?
I think I got some of it. It sounded like there was a plea for greater outreach to developing countries and non-commercial users. The global partnerships aspect of the staff, of course, is dedicated to those kinds of outreach. And also, the materials that we provided so far are intended to be for anyone.
Really, I'm not sure that the global partnership is for developing countries. Even for developing countries, they don't have the time to outreach outside the CCTLD or other structures. So, and that's why I know that maybe they attend the telecom operator meetings or CCTLD meetings, etc., or even sometimes police making meetings, but they don't have the time and the opportunity to outreach outside those communities. So I am really still concerned about those specific efforts. And maybe in this working group we can work more about developing countries and also non-commercial and also commercial organizations in developing countries or even in developed countries.
Yes, we certainly share your heartbeat on that. And based on whatever recommendations this group comes up with, we'd be happy to support that direction. And I'm intrigued to see what the new VP of Corporate Communications will come up with, given that Rada specifically asked her to bring greater diversity to ICANN. To me, that speaks of the same groups that you're referring to. So hopefully more and better things to come, and we're happy to follow your guidance on it, too.
Are there any questions for Scott? I have a comment to make. Scott, thank you very much for joining us, and I really want to commend ICANN for all the effort that you're doing for communicating and outreach. But I do agree with Rafiq that in developing countries, there's a lot to do. I want to speak from my region, which is Latin America. It's a nice example, not nice, but a clear example. In the people that have submitted a statement of interest for NONCOM this year, you have more than 80 from all over the world, and only 7 are from Latin America. As I see, the mainly all the efforts in our region are focused on CCTLDs, which is fine. I'm not saying that this shouldn't be done. But there are many other sectors of the Internet, of interest and people involved in the Internet that should be reached. And I think that our work should maybe focus more on other social groups, non-commercial groups, or commercial groups which are not involved at all or don't have an idea of what I can do. As a university teacher, I can tell you that I speak about ICANN and what we do and our working groups and all that with my students, but it's not enough. There is in all the universities, at least in our region, there is technical issues or legal issues. There is no idea of the relevance of ICANN as a policy body as a coordinator of the Internet as a whole. So I think this is an excellent opportunity to do things for outreach. But I want to commend ICANN for all the work that has been done so far. That's my comment.
Thank you very much, Olga. Your point is very well received. One place that you could help us help you is that often when I take such materials as we developed and try to get them translated into Spanish, Portuguese, and French for that matter, you know, the other languages, often budget issues are cited and there seems to be a reluctance to get a lot of this translated. If this group could come out with another ringing call for greater translation of materials, that would help us get a mandate that we can say, look, it came from the bottom up. This is what the community wants. We need to make this a priority. Currently, I have a plan to get the existing podcasts re-recorded in Spanish and French at the Brussels meeting, and the plan is in jeopardy right now because ICANN's budget may not allow everyone who would like to be at the meeting to attend it. So if we can get a call from this group for greater effort on not only outreach but outreach in languages other than English, I think that would help me get the kind of mandate that I could push back when people tell me that that's not a budget priority.
Yeah, I do agree that languages are a big barrier for many people. And okay, we will take your comment. Although I must say also that from the day I started work getting involved with ICANN until today, there has been a lot of improvement in relation with having documents translated into other languages. So I wouldn't be honest if I say that. If I don't recognize that a lot of effort has been done also, but there is a lot to do.
Yes, thank you for saying that. I agree with you, and even though we've done a lot, we can always improve. So it's our pleasure to try and support your efforts.
Okay. Any other comments or questions to start?
Olga, this is Rob. If I can be in the queue.
Sure, Rob. Go ahead.
Thank you. I think one of the important elements that this work team can be discussing in terms of making recommendations that I think would be extremely helpful is to talk about creating some clarity in terms of roles and expectations. I think Scott has done a very good job and has some tremendous professional capabilities, skills, and talents in helping us to develop some of these new tools, you know, in helping to draft up documents that talk about ICANN and some of its more complicated aspects in plain language. I think one of the challenges we have beyond that as a staff, however, is to sort of, you know, really clarify what do community members or what does the GNSO expect from the ICANN staff in terms of outreach? What does the work team think is the role of the constituencies or the stakeholder groups? And what may be the roles of just other volunteers? So that we have some clarity and you know, build some synergies in terms of expectations and leveraging the various resources. Because I think that, you know, we have, over the last year and a half, felt somewhat challenged as staff. When we do outreach, we get feedback from some members of the community telling us that it's not our job. And then others come and say, you're not producing enough. And so I think that if this work team can get some consensus around what the staff role is, what the role of the individual stakeholder groups and constituencies are, that would be extremely helpful.
Hey, Olga, this is Debbie. Can I get in the queue?
Sure, Debbie, go ahead. And by the way, let me tell you that we have set up a sub-working team that Debbie is leading, and so I'm very glad that she's in the call and she can make her comments, but she's doing a great job. She has drafted the first document, and we are all contributing to it. So go ahead, Debbie.
Thanks. I was two questions. Thanks, Rob, for your feedback. That's really helpful because it kind of relates to the question that I've been wanting to ask. I think in our last call, the group had wanted to get some clarity around the level of detail that the OSC was looking for this deliverable. I mean, this one this task was a little bit more elusive, I guess, to kind of wrap your hands around than the previous task. And so two questions. One, were we able to get any clarity at all about what type of deliverable and the level of detail that we were looking for? And I guess then the second point is, I guess I think I've got to answer because I heard a lot of what Rob was saying. I think that might help me, you know, with some from a directional standpoint on where to go next. But I was just wondering, Julie or Olga, have we heard anything back from them?
Olga, this is Julie. I can address that.
Sure. Go ahead, Julie.
Yeah. So actually, I sent around to the work team, and I'm sorry if some of you didn't see it. I'll send it around again. Two things. First of all, I had looked very carefully at the BGC workgroup's report with respect to the recommendations relating to outreach, and I provided to the team, and I'll send it around again, the direct quotes from the report. I think that provides some more detail concerning the task two, the outreach recommendations. And as I noted in my email, the recommendations are fairly broad and I think provide a good deal of leeway for this work team to decide based on the BGC recommendations what types of specific activities you might want to recommend. And when I did send that around, Chuck Gomes commented on that and also on the question that was raised last week with respect to the OSC providing guidance. And his comment to the list was that the OSC would simply direct the work team to the BGC work group's report. The OSC doesn't have additional guidance to add beyond that which is in the report. So again, I think that gives a fairly broad mandate to this team to devise specific recommendations for activities within the guidelines provided by the report. And in that respect, I would just add that I hope that the overview that Scott has provided of some outreach activities in that are happening now might give the work team some ideas as far as what activities they might want to recommend to continue, if there should be specific recommendations relating to translations, and as Rafik and Olga have pointed out, more specific recommendations for activities relating to reaching out to developing countries and non-commercial groups and users.
Thanks, Julian. I did see your email. I was just thank you for the clarification. I wasn't sure if there was any other communications that I wasn't aware of, but I did receive that email and review it, and I just wanted to know if anybody else had heard anything else. I mean, the report is what it is, and it speaks to that, and I've read that. I was just wondering, what their intent was behind some of this stuff, but I guess what I'm hearing is that this group has the flexibility to be as detailed or as not detailed as it chooses to be.
This is Rob. Yeah, I think there's a real opportunity for influence and leadership here because this is an area that many people in the community are interested in, but nobody really has the complete picture. And as you heard from Scott, there's, from the CEO level, there's a real desire for outreach, but what does that mean? And who does it, and how do we accomplish that in the best way to ensure that we're really reaching out to those communities like Rafik and Olga are mentioning have been underserved or under-communicated to over the years.
Thank you, Rob. Any other comments? Thank you, Debbie.
Olga, this is Claudio.
Claudio, go ahead.
I just had a brief comment. Thanks, Scott, for joining us. In terms of the website, I think something that would be helpful, and maybe we can include this in a recommendation, is just a participation page that basically, I guess, sort of consolidates the different elements on one page. So you could have maybe like a link to the ICANN newsletter, the policy page of the ICANN website, different ways for people to get involved, like the nominating committee, page could be linked there. But I think it would just be helpful that if you came to the ICANN website, that there was just a specific page or section dedicated to participation that people could go to, and it would sort of give a higher level overview of the different ways they can get involved. So that was just my thought about the website. When you were talking about the continuing education requirements. That to me, I think I'm just a little concerned there, like how far that would go, and if that sort of, if there's some sort of, mission creep a little there, and just how that sort of fits into the ICANN's overall mission and the objectives, I guess, that, ICANN's sort of focused on achieving. And I guess my question there is: is that program intended to be an outreach program? And I'm just trying to understand like how that program is getting it's sort of getting developed.
This is Scott. I'd be happy to respond to that.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm sorry. This is Julie. I do have to get on another call that starts right at 10. So I will follow up with the end of this conversation to make sure I've caught everything. But I think I have caught this conversation thus far, and I can follow up on the MP3. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Julie. Thank you, Julie. Thank you very much. Have a nice weekend.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
May I continue?
You're still on the hook, Scott.
Okay. Claudio, thanks for your comment. The existence of this program is really sort of random and reflects my background before I came to ICANN. I was involved in network security for about 9 years. And it's not intended to suggest any particular emphasis, but I had noted in my journey to ICANN that in the whole world of information technologies, as we call it in the U.S., I guess out in other countries you know it more as ICT, ICANN is largely absent from the discussions. So in my mind, this is an outreach move in the sense that I would think that people who run computer networks, whether it's at a nonprofit organization or a commercial business or wherever, should be very interested in what ICANN is doing, since the DNS and IP addressing affect virtually everything they do. And most of them are unaware that ICANN would like their involvement. So this was an attempt on my part to give people who don't really have ICANN on their radar a reason to come take a look and see if there's some way that they can contribute. As I mentioned, the CISSP program has gone all around the world, and it includes lots of adherents in Asia and India. So it's not just a U.S. thing, for example, even though it's a U.S. company that does the certifying. So I see some potential there, but it is not meant to be any major deal.
Yeah, and I guess to clarify, I think more on sort of ICANN's core function, like from the technical standpoint that you're talking about, it makes more sense to me. If it starts broadening out into other areas, I could just see it getting a little messier. But the way you described it there makes sense to me. Olga, I actually have to drop off the call, so.
Yeah, me too. Thank you, Claudia, for your comments. Thank you very much, Scott, for joining. I don't know if there are other comments, but we are a little bit past the hour.
Okay.
Rafiq, you want to comment?
Yes, because Scott was talking again about information security and also about this networking system, network, etc. I think that he's talking more about technical community and those people who may be interested by the DNS issues, but just think maybe the CSP sounds start point, but I think that it's not shouldn't be the point to start with, but to outreach other community and I think that in, even in our document, we say that we should have more joint activities or initiatives with supporting organizations or like, how to say, the IP registries, etc., and also the telecom operator, etc., if we want to outreach those technical communities. So, but anyway, just to start.
And Olga, this is Rob. I know as you all have to sign off, this is such an important and necessary area that I'm sure that you can flesh out other things via email as well between your calls.
Yes, thank you, Rob, and thank you, Rafik, thank you, Scott, thank you, Debbie and Claudio. I think it's a very important issue. I am very much interested in contributing from my experience from my region. I think Rafik has the same vision from Africa, and now he lives in Asia. So Debbie is leading very well this working team, so I hope that we can produce a useful document for the whole community and for the GNSO. We don't have much time now, but I encourage you to exchange some ideas in the list, and we have a document to revise. And
yeah,
Debbie,
so
perhaps we can see in the list how do you want to propose some next steps for task two.
Absolutely. What I'll do over the weekend is try to take some of the ideas that I've been hearing and try to update this document, and then maybe Monday through Thursday we can exchange some ideas.
Excellent, and talk to you next Friday. Have a nice weekend. Thank you very much for joining, and sorry for being a little bit late, but I think it was worth it.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.